Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I sat down with Temple University music history professor Stephen Zone to talk about Mozart's Mass in C minor. I first asked him why it's called the Great Mass.
Well, it's great in a lot of ways, one of which is the scope of the piece. It's an unfinished piece, but had it been finished, it would have been one of the longest Mass settings that exists. But it's also great because it's one of Mozart's greatest vocal works.
Can you give us a little context about the piece? Why he wrote it, when he wrote it? He had just come to Vienna.
He started the Mass in the summer of 1782 and completed it in 1783 in the winter. And the reasons for its composition are not entirely clear, even though we have a letter from Mozart to his father, written in Vienna, going to Salzburg, saying that he had written this as part of a vow, that if he would bring his new wife, Constanze, to Salzburg, he would perform a Mass there. And in the meantime, he had also had his first child. So the Mass could be also seen as a kind of thanksgiving for starting a family. But there was no commission. I mean, Mozart usually wrote on commission. It's not usual for him to write something on spec, or just because he wanted to write something that showed the love for his wife.
Well, it's interesting because I understand he wrote a lot of shorter Masses when he was in Salzburg.
Right. He wrote Masses that fit in with the conventions in Salzburg that were dictated by the Archbishop, but also by the Emperor Joseph II in Vienna. And that basically meant no Masses over 45 minutes long, no operatic movements, you know, small instrumental ensembles. So he was sort of constrained in that way.
Well, since he wrote a symphony by the age of 8 and an opera by the age of 12, I guess maybe he just wanted to write a big work because he was already now, 26?
Right. I mean, he was well into his career at that point. And another influence that we shouldn't discount is his exposure to the music of Johann Sebastian Bach and Handel, which occurred right around this time. He was exposed to this music by Baron Gottfried von Swieten in Vienna. Haydn was as well, actually. And von Swieten had a diplomatic post up in Berlin and came into contact with Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach, and when he came back to Vienna, sort of served as an important conduit between Northern German music and Southern German music. And von Swieten commissioned symphonies by Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach in Hamburg at the time. And so he exposed Mozart to the fugues of Johann Sebastian Bach and the oratorios of Handel, for example. And so this had a real profound influence on Mozart. And we can hear this in the Mass.
Can you point to parts of the Mass that illustrate this?
Well, there are several fugues, actually. The Gloria ends with a fugue. There's a fugue in the Credo as well, double fugues, which are not that common. So it's possible that Mozart also knew, for example, J.S. Bach's Mass in B minor. We can't say that for sure, but he's writing on a similar scale, and he's writing a similar kind of Mass, which is often called a cantata Mass, in that you have the parts of the Mass broken down into arias and choruses as if they were sort of part of a cantata or an opera. And that wasn't usual in his day. You know, Haydn did a little bit of that, but late in the 18th century, it was unusual to have a Mass like that.
But it was usual earlier.
It was usual earlier in the 18th century. But there are also, besides fugues in the Mass, there are also kind of Baroque touches. In a way, Mozart is kind of combining the Baroque and the classical styles here, showing what he can do. It's almost like a historical compendium of styles in the way that J.S. Bach's Mass in B minor is as well, because that includes music in the sort of Renaissance style as well as Baroque.
So you can see influences of Bach, Handel, and also Mozart's interest in opera?
Absolutely. Some of the solo movements are very operatic, which is one thing that people have criticized the Mass for, because you have these very solemn choral movements, you know, and then you have something that sounds like it could come out of, you know, the Magic Flute or something with, you know, the Queen of the Night singing all of a sudden, you know. Yeah.
Are you talking about the Gloria or the any particular part?
Well, like the Laudamus Te, or actually Constanze would have been the soloist in the first performance in Salzburg for the Christe in the Kyrie. And so these are elaborate soprano arias, you know, that some of them have obbligato instrumental parts. It really is very actually Italianate. It's sort of more like Italian masses at the time. So there is also, besides this Baroque and classical combination, there's also a kind of German and Italian combination going on here. So it's sort of a universal kind of piece in a way. And so it's not just about a Thanksgiving. It's not just about an elaborate love offering to his wife, and perhaps also a peace offering to his father and sister, from whom he was a little bit estranged after he left Salzburg, because they didn't approve of Constanze. They didn't approve of him leaving home, for example. So this is a lot of things, this mass.
It does sound like a labor of love to some extent. So why did he leave it unfinished?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, it may have just been that he had to move on to other things. He bit off more than he could chew. He didn't realize when he started what a huge thing this would become. We also don't know what he did in performance, because in Salzburg, it was a liturgical performance. So you had to have an Agnus Dei, which he didn't write. You had to have the second half of the Credo, which he also didn't write.
So when we say it's unfinished, it was missing the second half of the Credo. There are how many parts?
There's five parts. So there's a Kyrie and a Gloria that are complete. There's a Sanctus that's also complete, although it wasn't fully orchestrated. It has to be reconstructed. And then there's the Agnus Dei, which was never written, as far as we can tell, and the Sanctus only half written. So there are various theories about how this would have worked in performance. For example, Mozart could have taken music from a previous mass he had written and just inserted it, although we have the performing parts from Salzburg, and there's none of that previous music in there, so we would have to be missing parts if that's the case. Those parts could also have been sung in Gregorian chant. You know, that would have worked fine liturgically, at least.
So we don't really know why he didn't finish it. And today, what is the significance of calling it unfinished? It still sounds like this great piece of music.
Right. Well, it's unfinished like Schubert's Unfinished Symphony. You know, it is a fragment technically, but it stands on its own artistically, for sure.
And do we know how often it was performed in his day?
We don't really. I mean, the problem is that it couldn't have been performed in Vienna because it didn't conform to the guidelines that Joseph II, the emperor, had set. And Mozart was not back in Salzburg again. In fact, he never saw his sister again after this visit to Salzburg. He saw his father in Vienna, but he didn't go back to Salzburg. So as far as we know, it was not reused, except that he did write a sacred cantata 3 years later, 1785, in Vienna, and he recycled the Kyrie and the Gloria music for that. So we know at least by that point he was finished with the music. If he did, in fact, want to complete the piece, he would have done it by then, for sure.
So what's the history of the piece after Mozart?
Well, you know, it was published soon after Mozart's death, like a lot of his music, and entered the repertory, and so has become sort of a standard repertory piece. And it's kind of funny because it is so unusual in Mozart's output. And it's even unusual when you compare it to, say, the late masses of Haydn, which are also sort of standard repertory pieces. Those are often called sort of symphonic masses in that each of these larger parts of the mass, for example, the Credo, is a continuous piece. It's not broken down into arias and choruses. So Mozart was writing something unusual, and we may regard it as sort of a typical or one of the greatest examples of the late 18th century mass, but it's unusual even for its own time.
So what's the most significant contribution to our world today in this mass?
Well, I think the music is Mozart at his most dazzling. I mean, you get Mozart the opera composer and Mozart the composer of sacred vocal music and Mozart the explorer of Baroque counterpoint. You know, you get all of these wrapped into one, and there's very few pieces like this that you can point to. Maybe the Magic Flute, but not many others. I mean, it's ironic because that and Mozart's Requiem, another unfinished piece, are perhaps his most famous sacred vocal works now, but both were unfinished.
Thanks so much, Stephen Zohn.
You're welcome.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.